Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm Adam Barrett.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, how's it going, Fred?
Yeah, good, good. You know, I heard a podcast the other day that they recognize that people listen to this by themselves. It's not common that you put the podcast up on a speaker and for a small room of 20 people. It's usually in an earbud in your car or out for a walk or sitting, you know,
nobody
doing some other
thing. Nobody wants to admit that they listen to a podcast called Speaking of Reliability. That makes sense.
And this one was on, I don't know, finance or whatever one, but they started the show with, you know, welcome to the show. And then, you know, thanks so much for listening. And if this is the first time you've listened, you know, for Speaking of Reliability anyway, there's like 350 other episodes available, and feel free to dive into the archives and binge listen. But if you're an old longtime listener to us, we hope that this show is going to be as informative or better than our past shows. So thanks for staying with us and joining us again. What I haven't figured out though, Adam, is how to do that naturally and so it's built into the opening or it's a natural piece of it. So I thought I'd mention it for those that listen more than once. Hopefully you'll feel appreciated. If it is happened to be your first time listening, well, welcome. So Adam, what were we talking about before? It was completely different than podcasting and all that other good stuff. But it was, you know, my process of I'm constantly researching and learning and thinking about how to improve the podcast, the Speaking of Reliability show.
Researching and learning stuff. You've called me a nerd.
Yeah. Well, you were putting a formula together. That was the last episode.
It takes one to know one, Fred.
It does. But you were putting a formula together. That's fair game. No, I do this pretty naturally, though, with podcasts and with pretty much anything I do, right? And I know that you write about this a lot, is the just exploring and having the inquisitive mindset to ask why, you know, what everything from why is the sky blue to why did this fail and everything in between. But is that, I think that to me, I think it's a hallmark of a good engineer, and in particular, a good reliability engineer, is that you are not satisfied with, well, just because it broke, you know, let's replace the power supply. Oh, it's working now. Right. Move on. That's not good enough.
Yeah. I think you see consistently in all 4, 5, and 6 year olds, right? The one that's where the 5 whys came from, you know, why. And then the other is they love breaking stuff, and the breaking stuff is out of curiosity. Right. And
I love breaking stuff. It's, unless you're in the middle of a lake, that's a classic article you wrote.
that was yes, please we reference you to Adam's boat articles and the love-hate relationship.
That's right.
Which half of that boat motor is in my workshop on my welding table. The top half of it, I just started tearing it apart because I'm getting rid of every variable here, everything that's worn out, everything that, you know, I think my goal is to go from 72 electrical connections down to 3, and I'm on my way.
Yeah, good luck. But it's also you've talked about this before and written about it, is that it's a mindset type thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So there is that situation. I actually have a slide I made where it shows a kid with this crazed look on his face and broken toys in his hands. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I put that up there because I was talking about halt testing. And really, that's the core of it. That's the main mindset shift, is that a lot of engineers go into testing wanting to pass a test. We all want to pass tests. But you really get halt when you really go into it because you want to see something break. That really is the core of it. It's that simple. You want to see a break because you want to learn how it works. And that's very instinctual. That's why we break stuff.
Well, it's also, there's two ways that breaks, though, that you learn stuff. It breaks unexpectedly, right? Breaks in a new and novel way that we hadn't anticipated. And that's pure gold, which is hard to explain sometimes to people. But that's the useful one. But it also, if it breaks where we expect it to, our design and our engineering judgment was correct, and we get confirmation that it broke. So in both cases, we learned good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I talk about as far as a role is the detective. And the idea that to approach the failures that occurred in the testing like a crime scene, because that's really what it is. There's a bunch of clues as to what happened. You're trying to figure out the root cause. What happened? Who is the killer? You know, who's the murderer? Was it heat? Was it physical stress? Was it vibration? Was it voltage?
Or some combination? And, was it a gang activity here?
Exactly. Right. Multi-stress. So the... you know, having that mindset as well, that you really are an investigator. And I don't mean the reliability engineer, I mean the designer, right? And and that's why I would say if you can bring testing in-house, it's fantastic, because even if you're less experienced and have less equipment to do the testing, the fact that you brought it close to the designers who are the detectives is a big deal, because when the failures occur, they can come down the hallway and begin to participate. I mean, picture somebody trying to solve a murder, you know, remotely, right? Send me pictures of the crime scene. Send me this, send me that. You know, that's totally different than walking around and poking around yourself. You know, I think that's the other kind of character, you know. So we have the 6-year-old character that we're talking about embracing, but also the detective, the crime scene detective, who's trying to figure out why. So, those are interesting.
I'd say another piece of this is it's almost that you have to have an MBA hat on also. You have to be able to connect what we're doing to where it makes sense. It has a return on investment, and it's good for the business or good for the customer or both, usually both. So that we carry a lot of different hats. And I think the root of it, though, and what I love about reliability engineering is we'd never stop learning. Whether we're in the lab breaking something.
Actually, you bring up a funny point, though. Somebody better put a leash on us for the other side, because that's why we don't have the MBA. Somebody else does, because you can't just let us keep going, because we'll just break everything. We'll never stop learning. And there needs to be a counter force, right? So,
even design engineers. I can design this flange a little more elegantly, I need another 6 years and I'll get it just right. Although I have met some very practical engineers that that's good enough. It might have too much margin, but we'll cost reduce it next time. We got to have something to work on next year.
Right.
It's like, yeah, it'll work. No worries. Let's ship it. And, he was right. And I tried breaking it. I really, really did. But that inquisitiveness, that's the mind of a 4-year-old is... I don't know if that's the perfect analogy, because a 4-year-old's mind is a sponge, right? They're learning so much stuff. The early years, everything you see is new and novel, and you have this information overload, and you're finding patterns, and you're seeing anomalies, and you're, oh, electric socket. What if I stick a fork in that? Oh, that's not good.
I think the difference is but I think that's still within all of us. I think it's that you learn the inhibitions. And the MBA part of your personality grows and counters it, right? So there's a little bit of just preserving it. So, in essence, what we're saying is it's not that 4-year-olds have it and 30-year-olds don't. It's that you've learned from that between those two ages a lot about practical. Don't break stuff, you get punished, you know. Move on, do something else, let it go, you know.
I remember I was working at Raychem, and it was making these heating cables, which is a polymer system that we extruded over some conductors, and I had some samples sitting on my desk on some paper that were labeling where the samples came from, and I got busy and came back to them like a week later, and I picked up one of them. And something came off those cables and shadowed and discolored the paper, right? And it wasn't right under where it was touching. It was right to the edges of that. And it was like something flowed off of the polymer. And at first I was like, well, what in the world would do that? And looking at everything else, and nothing else was creating the shadows. And so I go down to the chemist who's the guy behind all the additives that would go into these products. And I showed him what I saw. And I said, you know, first, is this dangerous? Should I have this in my office? You know, I have no idea why. He goes, no, it's a plasticizer. It's an aid for manufacturing and it comes off. And it was almost 10 years later, I'm in a lab and we're looking at a piece of polymer that wasn't keeping tacky enough to move paper through a printer. And I said, are there plasticizers in this? Because after you manufacture it, that stuff comes out. And, you know, it was something I learned just by curiosity years prior. I'm like, oh, you know. But you've seen it in new cars, dashboards. I don't know if they still do it. I haven't had a new car in a while. But the plasticizers will coat the inside of the windshield for the first few months of a new car's life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's seeing stuff like that and not just going, eh, whatever. It's
right.
What is that? Well, understand
that's
that.
Why I so covet my hobbies, because they have such tremendous input to my work. I can't tell you how many ideas or solutions, or like you said, those observations, people would be shocked came from hobby stuff, you know, cars, airplanes, model this, model that.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It's, you know, I'd be like, oh, I did this with that, you know, and they might be assuming I did it on some naval project and it really was like a foam model plane that I made a servo thing for and this worked. And they're like, oh, wow. I didn't, you know, like they would be shocked to find out that's what it is. But it's the same thing, right? It's all the same technology. It's just scaled differently, you know. Yeah, but yeah, exactly like you said, you just asked a question or you figured something out or so I think to answer your question, yes, that is fundamental to being a reliability engineer. I really haven't met one that doesn't have that curiosity. And I had one of my first mentors said, you know, you just look around and see who's going to get bit by the reliability engineering bug. Mm-hmm. Because most people don't start off their career in that direction, but they get exposed to it and they're like, hey, this is cool. I really want to do this.
That's right.
And maybe that's what getting bitten by the reliability engineer bug is that you still have that part very much alive in you, and you finally find an avenue that encourages it and doesn't, you know, discourage it.
Right, right.
You know, hey, I'll let you go and break stuff, basically, right? Like, yeah. Here's a job. You do get to go break stuff to learn about it. Like,
well, yeah, right? And we also learn about all the ways things can fail. And I'm drawing a complete blank who described this to me, but he was described that a design engineer is working in success space. I think, was it you, Adam? The design engineers in the rest of the program team want to be successful. Everything from passing the test to getting working prototypes, right? To they want, you know, the product to work, to be successful. Right. And we walk in the room and go, oh, that's going to fail. That's a high risk. That's a problem. Right. You know,
I have that picture. I think you're referring to that picture in Popular Mechanics when I was doing the robots of Boston Dynamics.
Yeah.
And they caught that exact moment where we got a tree stuck in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And everybody, and the actual title of that section of the article was actually a quote from the soldier who was driving it. His quote was, "It sucks that I broke it." That's what it said in huge letters. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. And I'm like, yay! You know, like, because in my mind, that failure existed, right? Existentially, if you put a 3-inch diameter tree in this shoulder, it breaks. And that's going to happen eventually. And how lucky are we that with this one prototype, actually we had 7 at that point, how lucky are we that with this one day of testing that we had in the woods this day, we got to see it. That is unbelievable. Great luck.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it'll break a 2-inch one and a 5-inch one will stop it. But the 3-inch one is, you know, then it just stops.
Jams and it's garbage.
Yeah, yeah. It's got sensors in the inner part of the shoulder. And I'm like, holy crap, it's awesome. You know, we got to see this. And now we can redesign the way the sensors are, you know, like, but for them, they were like, ah, they were so upset. And yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and that gets lost when you're in that success space is because they wanted to go out for the day and get good pictures and see all the things that can successfully do. And I'm with you. If you can't tell where it successfully works until you find the boundaries where it doesn't.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I would have been bummed out. I would have been bummed if we came back and not a single failure happened. I'd be like, that's kind of a waste of a day. That was a very expensive, long day in the woods. And if we came back and not one single failure happened, I'd be like, we don't know anything more about this than when we left this morning. That's that would have really sincerely been what I was thinking. Like, what the hell would I write in a report for that day? Nothing like it.
Oh, the weather was nice.
You know. But luckily we had things like a hydraulic system exploded and the whole thing almost fell on me. We started a small fire. We found out it was the fall. It was October. And it turns out that there's this one part where we had this exhaust thing at the top where we thought was a safe place to have it. Mm-hmm. And leaves falling out of the trees landed on it and caught fire. I'm like, oh, interesting.
All you need is a soldier to put his, you know, pack on there. Then that'd be a problem, yeah, too.
Exactly. Right. I mean, the things carry fuel. The whole point of it was to carry stuff. Right.
Right. So, like, right.
Explosives? Can you know? There's like gunpowder and gasoline on this thing, and a leak. You know, like holy,
you're
right?
Pumping
like,
hot awesome. Gas right through it. Yeah, that's always a good combination.
We got to see that. That was awesome. And then the hydraulic thing was awesome too. That we got to see that happen like that. And then the tree thing. And I was like, oh man, this is what a valuable day. So
yeah. No, that was another classic of yours. Your whole series, as you were talking, I'm thinking of the different images you put up for it. So I do the real boring little drawings from castles from a public domain document from France, you know, from the 1800s. And because I find it frustrating to find the photos, you must spend a bunch of time tracking these things down and or making them, but they're great. Yeah, your article series is always it's a catch with the sometimes it's a puzzle though. I have to scratch my head a bit.
Oh, is it why I put a picture in there?
Or the particular pictures. Many times it's pretty obvious, but and clever. But you're right. It's that inquisitiveness, the mindset part of how we approach things, how we value that if failures actually are gold, they add value. We learn something from it. But let's spend just a minute or so on that other piece that you mentioned is the investigator. It's the more methodical, detailed failure analysis, get the facts, you know, all that part, which is a whole nother world to learn stuff because there are folks in the failure analysis labs are creating new and interesting tools from x-rays and SEM machines to chemical analysis to one of my favorites. It's called SQUID, SQUID. And it's, you can visualize current flow. It shows the flow of electrons visually.
Oh, really?
So you can find leak circuits or sneak circuits or traces have small amounts of, and it's like atom by atom. It's really cool.
That's crazy.
But every day, new stuff like that comes out or is under development, and you could go crazy just spending, and people do spend their whole careers just doing that kind of the heavy capital intensive failure analysis equipment. But I think knowing your way around, not destroying evidence, gathering information, looking for the contributing factors, what it was the circumstance at that particular moment, the crime scene type things, what you often describe. But then knowing when to dive in to the deep FA work that needs to be done.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's the answer to your question. Maybe that's what is so unique about reliability engineers is that they have both those hats. Right. Because as we said, those are two very different types of personalities. A 6-year-old just breaking stuff for fun and a crime detective are two very different types of personalities. But a reliability engineer is both of those and very comfortable in both those hats. So it's kind of interesting to put it in that kind of very direct terms that maybe that's what's unique is that they are people who wear both those hats and know exactly when to switch them and how to do both roles. And that's what makes it special.
Now, I I'm special. I know I am. So.
I know your mom told me you're special.
That's right. No, but I would add, you know, I'm thinking of some of the other stuff that is unique to reliability engineers, but there's many other engineering disciplines have to be able to do the detailed work and design and analysis type work. We use statistics oftentimes in that realm or that role. Yet we also have to explain things, complex concepts and ideas to other people in clear, concise ways. We have to be a good communicator and be able to understand how it fits into the rest of the business and how to make a proposal and secure funding and schedule meetings and all of those other tasks. And that the more I think about it, many of the other engineering disciplines have to deal with that also.
Yeah, they all do that too. That's not unique to us. I really feel like something came into focus just now in this conversation with you is that it really is those two being the duality. Because there's lots of people that are creative and good at figuring things out and whatever. And there's lots of people who are good at being analytical. But being able to be comfortable with both of those might be one of the unique factors of the reliability engineering discipline.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. There's lots of stuff involved in being a really class and good, valuable reliability engineer. But if those two pieces are missing, it's a much, much harder.
Well, I don't think the bug would, as my mentor had said, I don't think the bug would have bit you, right? That wouldn't be somebody that gets excited about this rather strange discipline.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder how much it might be a topic for a whole nother episode and we did that one of our milestone episodes. I asked everybody, so what got you started in reliability engineering? How did you get into the field?
And, do you remember my answer?
I don't. I'm sorry.
I was going to the bathroom and somebody stopped me and said, "Hey, you like statistics, right?"
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure if I wasn't going to the bathroom, we wouldn't be talking.
They would attract you down, those statistics starts are out there.
Right? They were like, "Let's get Adam and do this," because they wanted to investigate reliability as a discipline, And they're like, "Hey, can you go check us out and maybe you want to write a paper on it or whatever?" I'm like, "I guess," but I'm like, "I gotta go to the bathroom first, so maybe I'll do it later."
Do it later.
Was it.
Sparked the whole career. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should probably ask our listeners, what do you think? Does that make sense? The inquisitiveness or curiosity aspect of it and the crime scene investigators, that duality, or is there something else that you could point to that makes a really good reliability engineer? You can go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And that is a page that's dedicated to hearing from you. Let us know your comments and questions and thoughts on this. We'd love to hear from you. With that, Adam, I think we got a couple of ideas there. I think.
Yeah, I feel like as a species, we're better defined now.
That's right. Yeah. And we also, I think we mentioned your series of articles so many times. You better make sure we put the link to your articles in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
And but you can get to it, right? It's under articles, and then it's under
Apex Ridge.
Well, that's the name of the series is Apex Ridge, but it's under what subcategory? It's under product development, I think.
I never searched for it. Because I just.
Oh yeah, you're in the.
I've never searched for it blindly before, so I actually don't know which one it's under.
Well, I think the easy way to describe it is go to the about page for Adam, which is. I think the top listed about page in the dropdown, and there's a link there to his article series, plus a bunch of cool stuff about Adam. So,
well, like the latest way I've hurt myself. Actually, I forgot to share with you how I most recently hurt myself doing things, but I could do it or I could save it for the next episode.
Yeah,
but,
let's wait for the recovery.
I think we'll save
the
it,
whole story. Yeah. No, cool. Thanks, Adam.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.